This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades.
Their flours and whole grains are the highest quality and are minimally processed at their stone mill in Oregon.
Visit bobsredmill.com to shop their huge range of products. Use the code COOKINGISSUES, that's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order. Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from, I don't know, like 12:15, 12, something like this, to about, you know, 12:45, like 1 o'clock, from Berner's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Got Dave in the booth.
Good.
And habitual line stepper and America's favorite punching bag, Peter Kim.
Stas, how do you feel about the fact that drink. Dave will talk about the borough he's in with about 10 times more enthusiasm than he, you know, talks about the two of us?
That's true.
Or Dave in the booth. That's Brooklyn!
Hey, got... see that person out there? You know what they're excited to be? They're excited to be in Brooklyn. Do they know who we are? No idea at all. I mean, Brooklyn...
Don't
Brooklyn,
know, don't care.
Don't know, don't care. Brooklyn is a bigger deal than any of us, right. My friend.
All right. I'm just noting, observing.
Yeah, but like, I stand by that. What about you, Dave?
You know it.
Yeah, see what I mean? Hell, I don't even like coming to Brooklyn because I prefer to stay in Manhattan.
Oh, so sorry about it.
Wow.
It's not that. It's that, like, everyone, like, it's the people who live in Brooklyn, they're like, I don't really like to go to Manhattan. I just go there for work. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? No one likes to, no one who lives in New York, here's the messed up thing, actually likes to leave, like, a 5-block radius. People who don't know this about New Yorkers, we don't like to actually move around within our city. We all think we like to travel. Yeah. Anyone who lives outside of New York, they're like, oh, they're only like 45 minutes away from you. You must see them all the time. And we're like, oh, 45 minutes away? What? You know what I mean? Like, they're like, they moved like 40 blocks north of me, which is, what is that, like 3 miles, something like this? Not even. And you're like, 40 blocks away, they're dead to me. You know what I mean? It's like, that's just how New York works.
Yeah.
It's pathetic. We are the most provincial people. Like, we might as well be like, I don't know, like from the 19th century or something like that, in terms of our, you know, getting around habits, except for Peter. Peter goes around, sees everyone, does everything.
Man about town.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Nastasia, did you go to the Best New Chefs event last night?
Yeah.
How'd it go? Food and Wine's Best New Chefs with our friend of the show, Jordana Rothman. Was she...
It was crowded.
Yeah, was she...
I didn't see her.
Last time I went with Stas, she left me high and dry.
I did. I hugged Jordana, and then I left.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Nastasia doesn't want to ever... She's like me this way. Does not ever want to be anywhere alone because...
Well, no, I was with Peter.
She doesn't really like people. Right.
Well, here's the thing. It's not just that Stas doesn't want to talk to other people, which, you know, that's her prerogative. Mm-hmm. She will actually sort of suck my attention or other people's attention away, so I can't even function as a normal sort of social human being around her.
Until she has another wing unit, and then...
Then, yeah.
Then you're sloughed off.
Sort of.
Yeah. Like, you know, like
she still manages to shoot
daggers
of hate.
The extra ship you get in Galaga 3?
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, you get shot off the side, you know, wheelie, 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 wheelie,
yeah,
wheelie.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, you know, and then, like, you get shot off the side, she just keeps going.
That's right.
Gets another extra ship.
Yeah.
Dave's my favorite wingman.
Yeah, right. Well, because, like, Nastasia looks social next to me. With the two of us, we're the worst. We show up at a party, we both put, like, the most disgusted look on our face and get to the farthest corner, find a glass of booze, go to the farthest corner of the room, and just go...
Yeah. Well, with you, Dave, so for normal people, the distribution of conversation is small conversations with a lot of people. With you, it's like 99% of your time with the first person you speak to when you arrive.
Yeah, that's probably
why it's a
problem.
Who just starts asking you a question about something, and you haven't even, like, hit the elevator button.
All right, whatever.
That sounds about right.
Whatever. All right. So, you want to actually do a question? Right. Oh, by the way,
there's somebody on the phone.
There's somebody on the phone. All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, Nastasia, Peter,
and me.
This is actually.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
No, this is Antoine, previously from Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh, you moved?
I did. I'm in Burlington, Vermont now.
Wow. Huh. Nice. I mean, that's very different.
Very different. like you, I always hated the heat over there, you know, so yeah. I've been there since I was two and could no longer do it.
Are you like one of those drivers who like your foot's either all the way on the accelerator pedal or all the way on the brake?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, all or nothing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what's going up in Vermont?
You know, a lot, man. It's really good quality just food from here, year-round, you know?
Year-round? I mean, come on. Year-round? Vermont, what are they making in the dead of winter? You haven't been there in the dead of winter yet, right?
I've been here in the dead of winter.
What are they making in the dead of winter that's so great? We have rutabagas.
Hydroponic stuff here as well, greenhouses.
All right, fair.
Dairy as well.
Oh, dairy and dairy. Rutabagas.
A lot of ferments.
Fair.
I love a good rutabaga.
So I actually had a question regarding bottled cocktails, but with carbonating them inside of a bottle.
Shoot.
If there's any recommended pressure you do for in there, like all I have right now is an EC whipper, not the actual soda siphon.
Never use a soda siphon. There's no purpose for them. Soda siphons serve exactly one purpose, and that is to reenact Three Stooges episodes. If you wish to reenact a Three Stooges episode, the soda siphon is the best tool you can possibly use for it, unless you get the real old-fashioned seltzer things. But barring that, soda siphon, fantastic at that. If you want to spray somebody and you want all of the bubbles to be gone from your liquid by the time it hits your opponent's face, a soda siphon is the way to go. Other than that, or if you really enjoy cleaning out large bottles that have very, very small necks, such that you can't get inside the bottle and clean out the residue of what you've put into it, if you want to spend all your time doing that, then use a soda siphon. Otherwise, don't.
So, yeah, the question at hand is whether you recommend adding an extra CO2 cartridge to the whipping siphon to bottle a cocktail. Or what specifically?
So when you're using, first of all, like, I'm assuming you're doing this for yourself and not professionally, right?
Yeah, for myself.
Yeah, okay. Because if you're doing it professionally, it's a freaking nightmare because it's so expensive to use those cartridges. But the procedure is you have to do a pre-carb with one and then vent out and then the actual carb with the second charger. So you're into two chargers anyway. Adding a third charger probably won't help you much, right? Just because of the way the thing works. But you really, if you're going to start bottling cocktails and you're not going to do like the liquid bread cap, you're going to do like crown cork caps into smaller bottles. I will tell you the way that the very crappy way, hateful way that I do it. I hate it, but here's how it works. First of all, the most important thing in a carbonated beverage in terms of long-term storage is minimizing the headspace. You need to minimize the headspace in your bottle. So I can't stress this enough. Headspace is your enemy. You need to leave a little bit of headspace because otherwise small pressure fluctuations will blow the top, you know, blow your bottle apart. But minimize that headspace because just trust me on that. Just do that. Now, so the way that I do it is I usually chill my bottles. You don't want to overchill your bottles. If you overchill your bottles, like freezer chill them, then it gets so cold that you'll get ice crystals on the inside of your bottle, and the cocktails you pour in will get little crystals. Those will form nucleation sites in your host. So I would just say I usually will submerse in ice water for a while. You just totally immerse them in ice water so they're thoroughly chilled. Then here's what you do. You carbonate, and this I would do this with a 2-liter bottle and a liquid bread cap. Or like do it again and again and again. You could do it with an EC, but you're going to spend a fortune. Oh my God, I remember, you seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? It's going to cost him a fortune and fudge. That's Augustus Gloop. So anyway, like the point is that if you have, you're going
to... Like I wanted to do it for like an 8-ounce something to bring to the beach.
Right.
Or like by the lake, rather.
Right, so here's what you got to do. You're going to carbonate like a good bit, like 30% or more than you need, right? Then you're going to put your chilled bottles into a like a half hotel pan, and you're going to fill it up to the top, right? And then once the foaming subsides, keep adding, letting it pour into the hotel pan, right? And then as soon as it gets to the proper level, cap it right away. Don't even wait for the foam. Just cap it, right? And then later on, for your next batch, recarb the stuff that went into a hotel pan. That's the only way to get good crown cork stuff. Now, if you're willing to take your EC whipper to the beach with you, which is not a bad call, yeah, then just do a full charger into your EC, vent, do another charger, shake it, wait, take it to the beach, vent it out, and then, you know, enjoy a nice cocktail. But you have to be willing to take your EC whipper to the beach.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that.
Yeah. But it's like, I highly recommend getting a CO2 tank. Do you have a 20-pound CO2 tank?
I do, and it leaked on my way up here, so I need to get it filled up. I want to get the whole setup for like a kegerator sort of idea like you have in the book.
Right. What size tank did you have leak on you?
This was a 25 pound.
20? Was it in a moving truck?
It was in my car with me.
What the heck? It leaked dry? First of all, you shouldn't transport full tanks in your car. Obviously, you know what I mean? Like, but did you have any problems with well, obviously you're alive, so you didn't have any problems with getting poisoned. How fast did it leak?
No, it was like a slow leak because I left it open. I guess I left the gauge open before. So it could have been like before or after. I just didn't check till I moved in.
Right. All right. Well, get it refilled. Go to your local welding shop and get that tank refilled. And then I would get a single liquid bread carbon cap and then hotel pans with your bottles. And just carb, like I say, 30% more than you need, and keep refilling, capping, then rechill and recarb in the 1 or 2 liter, the stuff left over, and keep going. So that's how, when I need to make carb on the road, that's what I do. I'm working on a better system, but I haven't built it yet.
And if I was to do it from a kegerator, is there like a recommended pressure you'd recommend, or just what you recommended the book? Coming off of that,
yeah. I mean, the if you're going to come off of a keg with a cocktail, it's very difficult because of the foaming. First of all, you need to get the cocktail. I'll go with a lower ABV cocktail. You need to get it extremely cold. You need a long hose. You need to go through a couple of rounds of a cold plate, like 2-3, and then you need to get a really good compensator valve, so like much better than a beer line, and then still. I would put all of your bottles into a half hotel pan and like fill, and then keep like going around filling and spilling, as I like to say, filling and spilling. Then cap. Once you have the airspace very, you know, fairly small, and then you should get a decent, not great, decent level of carbonation. You also like you have to get your lines primed to get rid of any air bubbles in it. So like the first 4 seconds off of a pull on your any keg system is going to be real foamy. So you get your hotel pan, you get your stuff in it, you put your gun over the hotel pan, you hold it down until it stops being like hyper foamy, and then start your fill and spills on the bottles in the hotel pan. So it's not easy to do 1 or 2, but it's not so bad when you're doing like 40, you know?
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Anyway, let us know how it works.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much.
All right, cool. So, Peter, Kim,
David, Arnold.
We had our museums, the Museum of Food and Drinks yearly gala. So what was the shakedown? How was it?
That was our most successful event yet. Yeah. I thought there was a lot of love in the room. And we also announced what our next exhibition is going to be, which is cool.
You were wrong. There was no love in the room.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
That was not from Dave.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I think, what do you think?
How much did we raise? Are you allowed to say or not?
Yeah, over 230K.
Wow.
So just in one night. Not bad. Yeah,
so now it's time. Peter's going to go to the Caribbean. Just
yeah, how much of that are you embezzling?
That's right.
You know, Peter like has always wanted to learn steel drums.
Yeah.
He's going to learn steel drums. I'm going to learn bagpipe. And we're going to go, we're going to have the world's only steel drum bagpipe band.
And that's I can finally afford to replace the screens on my Sears All.
Are we out of stock?
Sorry, it's out of stock.
That's it's in my shopping cart on Amazon, but I can't seem to move it.
Yeah. No, it's cool, man. I mean, having the jet of flame coming out of my Sears All is really cool. But yeah. No,
I can't eat eggs anymore.
I know.
They're all goopy on top.
No, man, I think it went really well. We had like just a lot of.
You have to talk to Jim Leahy about his egg thing. It's gross.
Oh, really?
What are you talking about?
Tonight is his thing, but
what do you mean his thing?
Okay, so Jim Leahy makes these breakfast sandwiches.
F-bomb Leahy, you mean?
So first before you do this, tell the story about after the radio show what happened. What I call them.
They got in a fight about something, and then Dave called Jim Leahy bread man.
Hey, bread man.
And then Jim was like, whoa, it sounds like you're calling me, you're
an
saying
a-hole.
Yeah. An a-hole, and bread is ass, and Yeah. Man is whole.
And what did I say?
And you said, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so go ahead. Go
Wait,
ahead.
That's Dave Arnold. So he serves these breakfast sandwiches in his Chelsea shop.
Right.
And the egg is supposed to be scrambled.
Mm.
And it is so bad. So I told him that yesterday.
Wait, hold up.
First of all, whose scrambled eggs do you like? From people that I personally know.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know what scrambled eggs you like?
I like diner scrambled eggs.
So you like garbage scrambled eggs. Yeah. Peter, anyway, I'm assuming you like French custard.
Can I tell you his technique?
No, both ways I like them. They're just different things. Okay, sometimes I want the soft cook. Sometimes I want the...
Right. Like, Nastassi, love diner Nastassi's, eggs, though. What?
Love diner eggs.
All right, yeah. Nastassia's getting all pretzel. Go ahead, Nastassia. Okay.
So he boils them for 3.5 minutes.
In the shell?
In the shell.
Okay.
Then he...
That's a soft boiled egg.
Cracks them.
Very soft.
And into a... food processor.
What's this Roy Orbison stuff in the background? Is that from you?
No.
Are you singing that in your head?
No.
All right, go ahead.
Can we talk about eggs?
Puts them in a restaurant. Food processor and then puts oil and salt in there and then just...
whizzes it.
So does it turn into like a... Wait, oil and salt?
That's probably still really liquidy.
That sounds more like a sauce than
an
egg.
And then one piece fell between my toes one day and I didn't discover it.
What?
2 hours.
Wow.
First of all, who did you eat it with?
Mark thinks it's not very good.
Right.
Well, okay, is this a... We
told Jim yesterday.
I've never had...
I'd like to hear Jim make the case for
go
this.
Go tonight.
All right.
What's the theory of it? Is it supposed to... What texture is it supposed
to
be?
So it's easier for his staff to scoop out soft-boiled eggs. Scrambled eggs.
Right.
Wanted to make soft scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
I think that's very hard for staff to do.
Here's what I don't like. Let me tell you about the advantage. Like, I always would go not French soft style scrambled eggs on a sandwich because, like, they extrude and fall over everything.
That's
Even if you love them, like, let's just, for a better word, call it mini curd, like the French style scrambled egg, which is the mini curd scrambled eggs that requires low heat and constant stirring. I've never tried this pseudo egg type product. All but right. Let's just, because I can't picture exactly what the texture of what you're talking about is.
I think I can find it.
Why don't we just discuss
on a sandwich, you want structural integrity.
Right. So omelet style is the way to go. And the best way to do fast omelet style stuff isn't necessarily scoop, is to do large scale, flat sheet, folded, not sweet, but tamago, not that thick, but that style, folded, bop, 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 and then cut into
the perfect shape.
Cut into the shape.
This is what it looks like.
Let me see.
But it doesn't.
It's great for radio.
Yeah. Nastassia really understands that you people can't see.
Dave is a great descriptor.
Dave,
describe it.
I'm the great describer.
Describe the dish.
Let me see it, Stas. Let me see it. I will describe it for you. And coming around the track, we have, let me see. So it's a piece of bread. Oh, really? Bread man makes a piece of bread? It's a piece of bread.
Bread man.
And he's put through it, but he hasn't inserted it all the way. You guys familiar with that bamboo... That bamboo toothpick that has the little knot at the end, the little trifle knot at the end of it.
Mm.
One of those is kind of green on one side and brown on the other. You know what I'm talking about? Like a cocktail pick. He has that, but he's only stuck it about 1/16 inch into the top of the bread.
Right.
See, the whole reason for that stick is to shove it through the bread so that when you're cutting it, the bread pieces don't fall apart. Yeah. And when you're picking
notably
it up.
Notably for a club sandwich.
Most notably for a club sandwich, which I'm pretty sure is one of the top four sandwiches.
Yes.
Top four. Gotta be. Top five, maybe.
I'd have to go through the sandwiches to be sure, but definitely top 10.
Peter is sandwich man.
Yeah, I am the sandwich man.
Has anyone ever been... let's say you eat bacon and turkey, right?
Yes.
Has anyone ever been upset when they were handed a club sandwich?
I have. Because sometimes when a place does a club sandwich... They'll do not the cold cut turkey, like boar's head, whatnot, but they'll take actual turkey meat, which is good, but they won't season it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had so many bad turkey club sandwiches where the turkey meat is unseasoned.
That happens frequently?
Do you carry carry a small ice pick with you?
What's that?
Do you carry a small ice pick with you?
For myself.
Whoa.
Oh, do you? I like how...
the first move is just, in my own misery.
Yeah.
It's just easier.
Can you imagine if someone handed you a turkey sandwich, you took a bite, and then you just stuck an ice pick into the side of your head and fell over? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's
I've noticed that actually in New York City, diner joints, if you get a turkey club, it'll almost always come unseasoned. So I asked for extra salt, and I asked for the coleslaw, and I put the coleslaw on the turkey.
I think I know why this has happened. Let me mention this. It's because people are like, there's so much salt in deli meats. I'm going to make a healthy club sandwich. I'm not going to put salt. No.
Yeah.
No. Salt the dang meat.
Yeah, the club is the club. It's not going to be healthy.
No, it is healthy, Dave.
I mean,
that's what pisses me off. It is. Stop thinking about food. Like, in other words, I was talking to Shorty about our menu. And, like, he had a thing. Healthy bites. It's all healthy. The hell?
I'm not saying it's bad for you. I'm just saying, you know, like, it is what it is.
No, I'm not. No, I'm specifically saying that. Don't think about your food as a freaking. No. You said it's not you in your mind. You're still playing into the game. You've played the game. It's like freaking Jumanji. Once you're playing the game, you're hosed. Don't play the game. Don't think about it as a healthy choice or a not healthy choice because you're buying into crap science and crap arguments.
I was being flippant when I said that. I'm saying it doesn't matter. Who cares? It is what it is. It's a turkey club.
Enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. But the reason I care about people buying into it is people who don't otherwise. Don't otherwise know what's actually going on or think, make decisions that ruin the way things taste, have ruined Peter Kim's lunch on multiple occasions, as far as we know, based on...
I've never seen you get so defensive on behalf of Peter Kim. This is incredible.
Wow. Well, yeah, yeah. The other thing that's also in this line is the lack of... The under application of mayo to a club sandwich.
Okay,
like, I need, like, multiple layers of mayo.
Dave, are you that jerk who doesn't like mayonnaise?
Whoa, this is the...
I like it in moderation.
Dave.
Listen, a turkey club sandwich without mayonnaise is just...
I'm not saying you should do a turkey club without mayonnaise, Dave.
Wow, this is it.
Here's another thing. I've said it before, I've said it again.
This is it.
Sandwich disassembly people.
The moment that Dave Last Arnold episode. Came unraveled.
Peter, what do you think about people who disassemble sandwiches?
As much as I want to wind you up even further right now, they're the worst.
They're the worst!
They're the worst.
People who disassemble sandwiches are the worst.
Yes.
Worst. If you don't like, look, we have done the courtesy of putting on the menu what it is that is on the freaking sandwich. If you have a problem with that, if you disassemble your sandwich, you are calling me an a-hole. You're calling me a bread man.
What if you get a mealy tomato?
Yeah.
That is the fault of the restaurant. The tomato should be removed, and everyone back there should beat their heads against the wall until they understand what they have done.
Yes.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? But right. The issue is, it's because...
Wow.
Nastassia is sitting there like she's between two parents getting divorced or
yeah,
something.
I know.
We are so used in this country to the figurative tomato. There's no point to the figurative tomato. You can go... But right now, you can go to my local... garbage supermarket, which is a what's the local
supermarket? Wow, that's
Food Emporium.
Food Emporium. They went out of business. Food Emporium. No, there's still a couple left.
Yeah.
Or like whatever. Sea Town, Key Market, what like out in California, what's your garbage mart called?
Ralph's.
You can go to Ralph's in Covina, right? You know, home of Good Burger. And you can walk into almost any garbage supermarket right now and buy a decent hot house like a Campari or a worst name ever, Kumato. That's the worst name for a publicly available food product in the world. A Kumato.
Not to mention cherry tomatoes.
Cherry tomatoes, hard to slice.
Hard to put on a sandwich, yes.
Difficult to put on a sandwich. Can be done in a pinch.
Yes.
Any one of you out there can get something that has a tomato-y-like flavor right now. Forget seasonality. Forget that. You can do that. Or you can buy that mealy styro garbage. What's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point? And seriously, retail. I'm not talking like wholesale prices. Retail for $3.99, I can go buy a pound of decent hot house like Campari tomatoes, slice one per freaking sandwich.
Did you get doored on the bike ride over here or something? What's going on today?
I have this amazing image in my head Dave at like 60, 70 years old, alone in Union Square, like in a park, just screaming this into the air. Like, you can buy a nice tomato. Why are you buying these garbage tomatoes? You're the first against the wall if you get these tomatoes.
Well, here's the other thing. People want to buy a decent quality, non one of those Campari tomatoes. I had this argument yesterday with someone. All right. They want to. I'm like, okay, great. This person's tomatoes, like, maybe they're good now. Are they good all year round? Like, that's what these hothouses, first of all, there is a tomato, which you want on your sandwich, because for some reason we can't do without it. And I like the tomato. I like a tomato on my sandwich, like one of these Camparis or Kumatos, which is gross.
So much hate for the Kumato.
I buy them. It's just, why would you call it that? It's a horrible name. But anyway, point being that, like, that's fine, but you should just mentally distinguish between a tomato, which that is, and... the tomato.
Right.
The tomato is the one that is in peak season from a real farmer out of a real nice piece of dirt. namely Stokes in Old Topanga, New Jersey. Yeah. But and two of them. But I'm not even going to mention their varieties because I need some this year. I don't want you chumps going and buying my tomato. That's how much I'm going to Bogard the tomatoes this year, people.
Well, you know, Dave, it's all because of that genetic modify stuff going on. They're playing with the molecules, you know, the tomatoes, and it's just not natural, man.
Oh, so, those GMOs. Don't get me started. Yeah.
Really don't get me started. Like, for real. Wait. All right, back to the sandwich. Nastasia's phone is like, her screen lock is Uranus, which is weird.
I think we better take a break and let you reset.
We got to talk about the freaking eggs.
After the break.
Coming back. This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone ground products for decades.
This week, we have a question from HRN intern Sam. When cooking farro, she likes to toast it first for extra flavor. However, it's difficult to toast it right after rinsing. Do you have any tips for quickly drying farro or other grains?
Huh. Why not toast it and then rinse it? Like, why not just toast it first and then rinse it afterwards? You could throw it in a low oven, and that'll dry it out pretty quickly. So put it in a low oven, wait for it to get tacky and dry, then you can ramp the heat and do the toast out, right? It all depends on what you're trying to do, but here's a bunch of different reasons to rinse something. One, you think it's filthy. Two, it has kind of extra starch and other stuff on the outside, like products of milling or whatever, and you want to get rid of those for texture reasons on the cooked product, right? So if it's the latter and you're just trying to get rid of something, right, or even if it's filthy, but you're going to like cook it wet later, then go ahead and toast it first, then rinse it.
Stock up on all your grains. Go to bobsredmill.com and use the code COOKINGISSUES. That's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order.
And we're back. Okay, so
you're giving Dave a couple sedatives.
I were describing. I
see the drool.
Okay, so speaking of sedatives, right? I'm on this new. I don't even remember what it's called. It's called like xylophone or something. Some new allergy thing. Because 2 days ago,
Zyzol.
Yeah. There you go. And it's kind of messed me up a little bit. I took it last night because I had this. I've never had this crazy. I was like asleep. I fell asleep on the couch as one does. I get up to go to bed and like I choked. My throat was a little bit closed, but not 100%. You know what I mean? Because of season. And like somehow like the doctor says they think it was, Nastasia's going to love this, a phlegm ball got lodged in my airway. And literally like, so I stand up and I think I'm fine. And then you can't breathe at all. It's like someone shoved a cork in your throat.
Right.
And
so what'd you do?
Well, so like I was like, you know how I am, right? I get violently, like, I'm like, I try to breathe in, and all that makes it through is this, like, tiny whistling noise, but I do it so hard, like, popping blood vessels and stuff, that, like, I wake my wife up, Jen, from a sound sleep, I'm like,
oh, God.
Like, and then, like,
Jesus God.
Like, just, like, trying to get air in,
oh
and then,
my God.
And, like, so I'm like, I'm not breathing. As I'm like, okay, I've got a couple more seconds before
you
I pass out.
Against the wall?
And then I went, and like, you know, I can't do the accent, but I take all the stuff that's in me and I just do like a Hulk Hogan, like shirt rip, like, try to expel anything that's in my lungs out, like, ah, and I got a cough out.
Oh my God.
And then like after like one or two of that, I was able to breathe again.
You should be the spokesperson for Mucinex.
Yeah. I feel like I am becoming the actual mucus character from Mucinex. Like a kind of like a
you
greenish,
certainly have the same
like,
disposition.
Yeah. Yeah. My hat color. That's why I'm wearing a hat that's the color of the Mucinex mucus blob, because I'm trying to become that character. So anyway, so I'm on this medicine now, but it does mess me up a little bit. Maybe that's why I'm in a salty.
Do you so that you got the phlegm ball out?
Well, I'm alive.
But did you see the phlegm ball?
No, it was like 2:30 in the morning. I was like, and then like I had such an adrenaline rush. Can you unlock your phone?
2663.
You just said your phone unlock code on the air. Anyway, I had it. By the way, Dax just got ripped off by somebody. Did you know this? I have no love for the post office. I used to work for them, right? No love. Nastasia hates them. What was our famous quote, Nastasia?
It should be called USP. Because there's no service.
That's right. But Dax, someone tried to rip Dax off in a scam. Dax wants to be an entrepreneur. So he's like buying stuff. You heard of this brand called Supreme?
Yes.
And you know, so Supreme's dropping stuff. So he buys like whatever he can get from the Supreme drop and then tries to resell it. This is what all of the middle school kids are doing here like in his neighborhood. and then reselling it. So Dax buys, cool, of all things, a freaking ashtray. An ashtray. Mm-hmm. And then he gets scammed by someone who's like some sort of swap. But here's the Prince information. Here's the information. You can now recall a package. Did you know that? That you just sent. You could be like, you know what? Don't deliver it.
Oh, really?
And so we got it back.
Nice. Remember when you were, whoever were you buying something from, and the guy was like, just send the money.
Oh, we were trying to buy a tractor.
Yeah.
Remember hey, guys, last I checked, this show's not called Postage Issues.
No, that's a good one, where he was like...
Well, Nastassi was like, yeah, Nastassia is very good at this. Like, if you ever need someone to take on a spammer, like, double barrel, full board, like, take Nastassia with you. Same way, like, if you ever need to get around a line and you need someone who has absolutely no compunction about having everyone in the general vicinity wish her dead,
yeah,
take Nastassia with you.
But if you want to make friends, don't.
Yeah. So anyway, so back to
Jim. That's a trade-off.
Back to Jim Leahy's sandwich. Here's the issue on this. I think sandwiches should only be made by people like Peter Kim who actually enjoy eating sandwiches, right? The problem with having the French-style egg on a sandwich is, as I've said, extrusion. Anyone that makes a sandwich that cannot be eaten without all of the goop extruding of the sandwich made a grave, grave error.
That's absolutely right.
This is why, like, I love the old days of the hollowed-out bread so that the stuff stays inside.
It still
of
exists. The you've got to ask for it.
It's done. You know, Subway used to do that. Subway used to do the V-cut hollow-out on their breads.
Oh, that's right. They used to.
That's right. And it was a higher quality sandwich back then because it didn't leak all over everything the way it does now.
Yeah.
Also, excessive mayo, to go back to mayo, you do need mayo on a turkey club, but like a lot of those places, they're like excessively goopify.
Right.
A sandwich is a
delicate
balance.
That's my problem, Dave. I just don't like excessive mayo, okay?
Yeah, excessive, yeah, right. Excessive goopiness is good. But
plus, like, salted veg on your thing, if it's salted too far in advance.
Right, unless it's unless it's an inherently crunchy thing like bell peppers.
Right.
Which, but anyway, but like, my issue is excessive goop is bad, but between excessive goop and excessive dry, I'll take excessive goop.
No.
If you had to go one way.
That's absolutely right.
Like, I think people don't understand every, like, if you have the top, let's say some idiot just puts mayo on the bottom slice of bread. Right. Then your mouth, the roof of your mouth, which doesn't, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you've been alive, but like the roof of your mouth doesn't produce saliva. The bottom of your mouth produces saliva.
Yes.
Yes. So like if you have an incredibly dry top surface, you bite in, you excoriate the top of your freaking mouth, and it's all that dryness up in the roof area palate section. And unless you have enough moisture to moisten the whole bite as you bite down, it's an unpleasant experience, no matter what the bottom of it's like.
That's right.
So, you know, always make sure that this is why always, if you're going to put it, when you put your liquidy condiment of choice or a creamy condiment of choice, always at least do the top. I'm a firm believer in bottom as well, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you have lettuce on a sandwich, right, think about placing the lettuce in a way that prevents the bread from getting soggy because the lettuce is a semi-impermeable membrane. Right.
And also thinking friction against surfaces, like slippery versus against slippery is no good.
Yeah, right, right. This is why I like raw onion in a sandwich. You guys, raw onion?
Yeah, I like raw onion.
Jen hates raw onion.
Thinly sliced.
I hate raw onion.
Thinly sliced, right, but like a raw onion is a good anti-slip surface in between things like tomato and avocado,
right.
Let's just say. Because it kind of smooshes into them and then locks them into place. Give your sandwiches a good firm, don't crush it. I'm not saying crush it. A good firm press before slicing or serving with your hand to lock all the ingredients into place, I think is also a key move.
Yep.
But anyway, so I highly recommend before you serve anything, eat a sandwich and see whether or not the vast majority of the ingredients stay on the bread or whether they end up between Nastassia's toes. And if they end up between Nastassia's toes, you have made a grave error. Right, Stas?
Yeah, it was not good. Gross. To find later.
I feel sick.
Egg toes, toe eggs. All right.
All right.
So wait, I heard we got a question in from the room of much chatting.
Oh, yeah. Somebody in the chat room was asking about a vending machine at existing conditions.
Yes, we have one. We, in fact, have two. We have Vendo Calrissian and we have Antonio Venderis. Are the two machines? Because wow. Vendo is the name of the brand that we did. So we bought these old soda vending machines, and I've modified them to go down to stirred cocktail temperatures. So they hover, in fact, slightly colder, so that they stay. So they it hovers in and around it hovers between -4 and -3 Celsius, but it's so the drinks stay a solid -4°C. And then we have existing conditions tokens, and you drop the token in, and then you can pull out the cocktail of your choice.
What if you pull two?
You can't, that because it's a real vending machine. Mm. Like, it's a real vending machine. So what happens is you put the token in, and this is the part because I'm not using the original coin mech that we had to work on. Free vend is not a problem, but putting the you have to put the coin in, then you have to make it such that it doesn't accept another coin until someone has pulled it. Then once they pull it, it relocks. Mm. You know what the old school people used to do? The guy was telling me, you know who it is? It's your boy. But I can't mention on air because I don't want you buying the rest of his machines because I'm going to buy them. But anyway, he was saying, they're weird people. They're up from like I know all you people who, you know, are from other parts of the country, not from the Northeast. You think that like, you think Connecticut and you think like Greenwich, Connecticut, right? So you're thinking Greenwich, Westport, like, oh, ha, ha, ha. Like, you know, with the pinky out and like on their boats and their ascots. No, Connecticut.
Ascots.
Ascot. Connecticut is like full of like hicks and swamp Yankees once you get in off the coast. Wow. You know what I mean? And we're like.
Dave is hated on Yankees. So many people.
Look, and let me tell you something. I love those folks. Like, they're my people. I love those folks. You know what I'm saying?
But
like,
I love them. They're beautiful, beautiful people.
Hey, that's like, you know. Like,
losers.
I know. I mean, like, you know, I feel at home with those folks. You know what I'm saying? But my point is that we're getting our soda machine from that kind of crew, and not from the Greenwich, Connecticut. You know,
I forgot this started out with crew. A vending machine.
Anyway, so what he said, what they used to do, what the kids used to do, is they would open the door because it's the old school where it has the door on the side that you can open, and then you physically pull the bottle out. It doesn't drop it, right? He said what they used to do is pull the bottle out like a quarter of an inch with a cup, and then just pop all the lids off and dump all the first sodas into cups and drink it and walk away.
Wow.
Because people are garbage. If someone does that in our bar, don't forget, we can see you and we can lock the door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Ooh.
It's not just me. We have lots of large people working with us. I mean, I'm not a large person. But
but you could kill someone because you have a simian crease.
So we pop Supapi Pot, who apparently now is like, you know, like doing very well in Bangkok, right? So I have what's called a simian crease. So a simian crease is there's a line across your palm. It's like most of you, if you look at your hand, describe this, Peter. If you look at your hand, you have two lines that go across your palm.
I have like three.
I've got three.
I got one. Yeah. It goes straight across. Yeah. And it's called a simian crease.
Which means you're either.
Well, it's found in monkeys, hence simian. And it usually means that you're a monkey, like an ape. Yeah. Mentally retarded, like literally, like it's like it's like a sign.
I'd say that.
So anyway, I'm talking about like a literal medical thing. It's a medical thing.
Okay.
Anyway, so we've always joked about that, basically that. So our old intern, like Weepop, looked at it and said, "Oh, in Thailand, that means that someday you will accidentally kill somebody."
And he was very serious. Yeah.
Yeah, dead serious.
Yeah.
He's like, someday you will accidentally kill someone. He's like, you won't kill him on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, it's so specific. Such a specific palm read.
Can't you see that happening, Peter?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's almost killed me a few times accidentally.
What? Don't know. Things that you do on your own that result in your death are still on you, even if I was the instigator. All right. Johnny Revy wrote in, "Hey, Nastasia, Dave, and Dave in the booth. Nothing for you, Peter."
Silent
team. He had no idea he was going to be here.
Guys, working my way back through the cooking issues catalog. As soon as someone says working my way back, I have this song. And are you going to give me a burning love inside?
No.
Hey, get to it because there's somebody on the phone then.
All right. Well, this is going to take a long time. You want to do the phone?
Oh, 3 minutes.
Do the phone then.
What Johnny wants me to talk about, I'll get the phone. I have a question regarding Dave's research methods. Often refer to interesting academic articles in response to listeners' questions, wondering how you're able to find such pertinent, detailed research. Are you just using Google Scholar, or do you have access to more academic databases? I break into something called the Web of Science, which is Elsevier's database. I know that they're a gun-running group, but whatever, they have a good database. I also use Wiley Online. And those two have a lot of stuff. You can also use JSTOR. JSTOR has a lot of the older stuff. And you can use something like Google Scholar to get a first couple of hits, but once you get into it and you get good search terms on those, you can download a bunch of stuff and then download the bibliographies, look at it, and dig in. That's typically the way I do it. But the problem is, like, for instance, you had a question like, does salting mushrooms earlier in the cooking process draw out moisture? I suspect it does, but maybe you can shed some light on why it does or does not. This kind of problem isn't typically addressed in the scientific literature because, and here's the secret. The scientific literature only is written if there's money behind it. So if there's an industrial problem, if you can save a gram of oil by doing it over the course of making, you know, billions of potato chips, there's a lot of money to do research on it. If there's something about fat reduction or some garbage stuff about health, some fake lies about how something is going to save your life,
something or that end Dave it, would be interested in,
or end it, there's a lot of research. But you have to think about the problem that industry wants to solve. And if you can think about a problem that you're interested in that industry wants to solve, there's a lot of science behind it. Specifically on mushrooms, the answer is you salt them as you're cooking them because you really want to get as much moisture out of those mushrooms as possible. I salt and crowd. You can go into my old cooking issues blog, which still exists. I looked at it the other day, and look at the post on mushrooms. But I'm a firm believer, the old school French of like, fry a single mushroom at a time is totally wrong. Crowd those suckers in a pan. If you do anything other than crowding them and salting them beforehand, you're an enemy of quality. So just go do that. And hope Booker can make it back on the show to talk about his first cooking experience as a pasta flyer. Huh? Huh? What do you think? He's doing well or no?
He's doing well.
Yeah. All right. Caller. We have caller. 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 Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Hey, on an old recommendation that Peter Kim made, some Senegalese beef stock, and it is indeed delicious during summertime.
Yeah? Yeah? I like that.
Awesome.
So you're talking about, is there anything in it other than just a hibiscus? Hibiscus, a.k.a. sorrel, a.k.a. Jamaica. What?
Sometimes ginger.
Yeah.
Ginger.
Really good.
Yeah.
That's a staple in my house.
So, here's my real question. So I use a baking steel to make crepes because I don't have room for the whole big crepe maker, at least yet, because it retains heat very nicely. And I'm trying to use the replet as well.
Right.
But like when I'm spinning the replet, invariably a little bit of cooked crepe gets stuck to the tip of the replet as I'm spinning it, and then it tears a hole in my crepe.
Okay, so
and I don't know if I'm doing something wrong or what.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know, replet. So for those of you that haven't made crepes professionally, but you have had someone try to squeegee your car, right? A replet is basically a crepe squeegee, right? Now, the French raclette, are, they look like wooden squeegees, right? With a, like, and they, the wood is kind of like made to a little bit of a knife edge, and I'd say they're, what's yours? Like 6-7 inches long? The 6-7 inches wide?
Yeah. And then, mine's basically a round dowel on a round dowel.
Oh, no, I don't know. I never use that. I use the one that looks like a squeegee.
Squeegee, okay, all right.
The one I use looks like a squeegee or a rake. I've never used the round dowel one. Maybe that's your problem.
Maybe that's my problem.
It gets caught on the interior tip or the exterior. So anyway, so
exterior
what you do?
Exterior tip.
So like
as I'm spinning, like I have a central anchor point, and I try to keep it really level, and then I do a kind of a clockwise rotation, and I feel like always a little bit of partially cooked gets hooked to the end of it.
Right.
And as I'm spinning, then it just tears a big tear across the rest of the crepe. It's really annoying.
Okay. So like typically, like the way you do is you have your ladle, you pull your ladle out, and you can see this in DOSA. So DOSA folks don't use anything like that, right, Peter? They just use the ladle, don't they?
I don't know.
Anyway, so I don't remember. So you ladle it out. You do the same like you do the swirl that you're going to do for or you don't even really need to if the crepe batter is thin enough. But like in fact, I never used to. So some people they'll do pizza sauce swirl. You know what I'm talking about? The pizza sauce swirl.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think I ever used it. Maybe I did a little bit. Just it needs to be a little bit flat. But then I drop it, and there's literally no force on it. So, and you do it fast enough, you're not getting. I never really do it after the initial set. So I'm using it basically as the initial wipe around, but not so much. And I do two and a half full revolutions, but I can't ever remember saying I would have holes in it. But if the batter is cooked enough to stick to the exterior edge of the replet, I'm thinking you're doing it too late in the process.
I'm trying to go fast. I don't know if that's really annoying.
Well, maybe it's cooking real fast. Try one of the squeegee shape. Go look for a squeegee shaped replet and see whether that works. And remember, no downforce. Are you using any downforce?
Yeah, yeah.
No downforce.
And I'm trying to keep it even, but maybe I am.
Another trick is it is your my replets my replets would always come apart, so I would keep them kind of moist. Maybe I don't know whether that actually helps it, but my replet was always moist.
I try to keep a bowl of water and keep it soaking in it, so that any little bits that you adhere to it will kind of wash off. But
Also, the other thing is, how long are you letting your batter rest?
I make it the night before.
Okay, so you're letting it rest long enough, because it's usually, obviously, it takes the first couple of crepes to get the temperature of your thing right? Or if you're using semi-fresh batter, you get those air bubbles and garbage, which always cause tears and problems out in the first couple of crepes, and that's when you're really good. Right. It's really the fifth, the fifth through the 30th crepe that are good. You know what I mean? Not crepes through five are family.
The Russians really like their crepes, and there's a saying in Russian, the first, they call it blini. The first blini always sucks.
Because crepes and things like it, blinis, doses are, they're steady state operations. You want your heat source to be in a steady state. You want your batter to be in a steady state. And so, that's why, same thing with stuff like El Pastor, like tacos El Pastor or anything like that. Is someone cannot make the best al pastor if they're not serving a billion units of it a second, because it's best when the thing is rotating and it's on a high steady heat to create that nice flavor on the outside of the meat, but you're continuously shaving so that it never dries out. So certain tricks like that, certain recipes like that really respond well to volume and kind of constant production rather than kind of one in, one out. But anyway, let us know what happens.
Really quick questions been gnawing at me.
I don't know.
No, you can't. We're done.
I don't know. What do you got?
This is my job. I'm not shut you down.
I'm not going to out them, but it was at a really well-established restaurant in Seattle. Really nice. Been around for forever. And they served these freaking delicious savory donuts that were deep fried in bear fat.
Ooh,
and
I've heard
asked the chef about it, and he was like, well, we get it from a USDA approved facility in Colorado where they use sharpshooters to shoot black bears, and that's why we're able to use bear fat in our commercial establishment, which seemed totally like BS to me.
Here's the thing about strange meats. So what was the name of the guy we used to use, Nastassi? Do you remember?
No.
So we used to use this guy that told us everything was on the up and up, and we believed him, and then found out later that he had gotten arrested and done some jail time for being shady. So just... Look, if you're going to cull bears and you can somehow get USDA certification such that you can get bear fat, great, if it's all on the up and up. But just, if it seems crazy, right?
It probably is. Cooking issues.
All right. All right. Cooking issues.
Healthy food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.